Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Roski Mascani. And this evening, we have our regulars here. We have a special show this evening. And we have the Fantastic Five that's here almost all the time. And that's Professor Amin Ra, Ernest McBride Jr., Brother Mashinda, and Brother Ahi, and myself. So that's who's here on the consistent basis, and I'm glad that they come and show up, and we always have a great time learning and talking to people all over the globe, primarily in the United States. So before we get started this evening, I just want to say that we have distinguished guests from Langston University, and before we introduce them, I want to say a few things. I have a special connection with Langston University. Back in the 40s, the mid 40s, my father was a student there at Langston University, and he came out of Dallas, Texas, in East Texas, but he was only there for a short time, and he's deceased now. But when we were in the 90s, we took a road trip to Langston University to one of the homecomings. And it was just so beautiful to be around all of those beautiful Black people. It was a joyous time going to Langston University. It made me think about why didn't I check out HBCU when I was coming out of high school, because I played ball. I had an opportunity to go to most universities, and I should have checked out some HBCUs. And visiting Langston, it was just so awesome being at that school. So now, also, a real good friend of mine, he's a retired teacher out of Oklahoma City. We taught together in Long Beach. Matter of fact, he's entering right now. He's a graduate of Langston University. So a real close companion of mine is a graduate of Langston University. And then I have a real close friend that I grew up with on my street in Compton, California. His parents moved to Oklahoma City because General Motors closed down in Los Angeles. So people went to Oklahoma City. They went to also Louisiana. And so his parents landed there in Oklahoma City. And then he went to join them a few years later. And his son, he's been there for many years, since the mid 80s. His son is a freshman in college. I went to Douglas High School in Oklahoma City, two-time state champion in basketball. He is one of the members of the basketball team at Langston University. And also, he's one of the best young men that you want to meet. Just a very astute, honor roll student, and it's just wonderful. And so these are my connections to Langston University, and I can't wait to go down there and see games, and hopefully you guys, his name is Jaden Williams, and hopefully you guys will be able to meet him one day and check him out on the court. He's getting plenty of playing time. He started a few games, and Langston is already on they have a winning record already, the men's basketball program. So I take my hat off to that. And now I want to talk about briefly how this came about, how this gathering came about. I had a friend from Washington State University back in 1984. And good friend of mine's and a member of the ladies basketball team at Washington State, and I was on the men's team. And so I lost contact with her when I left the school. I left in 1985 to transfer to Long Beach State. And she contacted me on LinkedIn, and I responded. And so we got a chance to talk, and I told her what I was doing. And she said, "You know, I have a real good friend that I met that's just an awesome, just very highly energetic, productive friend of mine by the name of Daryl Green. And he's a professor and a dean at Langston University. I'm like, no kidding. I said, well, let's get him on the show. She said, not a problem. And so here we are today. You know, and it's just a wonderful thing to meet so many good people and educators. So what I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna turn it over to Dr. Daryl D. Green, a professor and dean of the business school at Langston University. Welcome, Daryl. And what I want you to do, if you don't mind, is introduce yourself and your colleagues, the panel, and then each one of them can tell us a little bit about themselves, if you don't mind.
First of all, I want to thank Rasaki
Moscone.
Mascani for in the Community Education Network for having us. And I just want to start this. I often wonder when I think about our forefathers, how could they do so much with so little, while we with so much, do so little. So I pay homage to what you have done and what you are doing. I bring you greetings from the prestigious Langston University School of Business, ranked in the top 40 HBCUs in the country that have a business school. There are 89 schools, one of the top entrepreneurial programs in the country. And I just want to thank you for giving this opportunity. We believe in Langston's theme: you enter to learn, you exit to serve, and this is what we're all about. A little bit about me, and then I'm gonna introduce my esteemed colleagues. I'm originally from Shreveport, Louisiana, so I believe every time we talk, it's really about a family reunion. You can trace most wherever you are, the north, the south. You can probably have some sort of roots that take you to the south. I'm originally from Shreveport, Louisiana. Graduated from Southern University in engineering, met my wife there. Spent 27 years working in the Department of Energy, managing nuclear things. But like you, Mascani, having a purpose, I went back to school, got my doctorate degree. I wanted more out of life. So at 2016, I gave everything up. I was working happy in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I wanted more in life, and I didn't know anything about. I had some. I taught adjunct, but I went to. I interviewed at a school, Oklahoma Baptist University, in Shawnee. Didn't know anything but OU and OSU football, and that was transformational. We left. My wife, myself, moved to Knoxville, Tennessee. I mean, moved to Oklahoma, and 7 years were at Oklahoma Baptist University, and then God brought me to Langston. And we're in a rebuilding. Like I said, we've come a long way, and we are trying to just, as we say, we're going to get more better. So I just want to introduce our colleagues that are with me, and I'll let them introduce themselves. Dr. Mabula, he's with us. He is our business professor. He's an entrepreneur. He actually teaches the grad. He's actually manages the graduate school. We have Dr. Leslie Cornegay, who is another one of our part-time professors. She is in North Carolina. Put things in perspective. She's a leadership expert. And I want to introduce Mr. Professor Ken Dowdy, who is he is a alumni of the Langston University. And he could talk about the ball. He was recruited. He was a baller. He went to a couple of different schools. So you want to talk about balls, he probably knows Williams. He probably knows him and can track it down. So at this time, I'd like for them just to say greetings. Give us your 60 or 120 second a pitch. We're gonna start with Mabula. Oh no, we'll start with Mr. Cornegay. Ladies first. Cornegay, Mabula, and then Dowdy.
Thank you, Dr. Green. I want to thank the CEN Network for inviting us to have this rich discussion tonight. Just a little bit about myself. As Dean Green has said, I'm currently in Durham, North Carolina. I am a military brat and traveled all over the world very young in life. But it wasn't until I was much older, like late 30s, before I started my own travels as an adult. And my travels were to support my career. And so I went all up and down the North Coast to numerous different universities. I've been in my profession for about 45 years. And, you know, I guess you could say I'm seasoned at what I do. I'm an executive at Duke. I have taught part-time when I lived in Vermont. I took on some, once I got my doctorate, I started teaching leadership courses and eventually got into marketing and business, that sort of thing. I was with Dean Green. I was introduced to him through another entrepreneur and who started up his own talk show. And he had him on there as a guest. And from there, we just have been going strong since. He invited me to be on his think tank team. And when he went to Langston, he asked me to join the team. And so it's been a really rich experience for me. I talk about it a lot to people because it's the first time that I've actually had a mentor in my life, or a sponsor is a better word, especially now that I am, you know, one of those baby boomers that's deciding on what my next is, coming out of the higher ed in corporate America. I know that I want a stronger presence in higher ed. And so that's just a little bit about me, but it's very nice to meet everybody and glad to be here.
You too.
Mambula.
Okay, good evening, everyone. I am Charles Mambula, originally hailed from Nigeria. I've been at Langston for a little over 17 years now. I'll be going into my 18th year next year. I started by the way of Morgan State University in Baltimore through Massachusetts, and then I came into Langston. So I teach entrepreneurship and business courses at Langston University. So I'm glad to be here today and to participate in this honorable program. Thank you for having us.
Good afternoon. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for having us. My name is Ken Dowdy, Ken Dowdy Jr. I'm a graduate of Langston University. I did play basketball there from 96 to 99. I also played at OBU. Dr. Green and I had a small connection there. He wasn't there when I was there, but I started school there. Earned my MBA from Oklahoma Christian University while at AT&T. I have a passion for education because my mom was a principal for 40 years. In Oklahoma City Public School District, 30 years rather, long teaching family background. I teach fundamentals of management, entrepreneurship, production and operations, supply chain, and whatever else Dr. Green would love for us to do. I'm also currently the chairman of the Zip Gales Foundation. It's a fund that we have at Langston University that raises money for the boys, the men and women's basketball team. I think it's important that we give back. And so one of my goals and foundational things is that if we can get all the Langston alumni to give back, then Langston doesn't need as much help from the public by way of corporate dollars. We'll take corporate dollars, but we got to get the alumni involved. I'm also a full-time pastor. I'm also the president and founder of Walk by Faith Logistics. I have a logistics company. Few trucks on the road. I also own Abundant Life Coaching, which is executive coaching company. that provides leadership and mentoring to people who are trying to move up in their lives. Me and my mom own a company called Dowdy's Delights. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. He had a company in Oakland, California called National Furniture, and I think I got some of that from him. And then I started a publishing company. As a young Black publisher, I think that everyone has a voice. I'm in the classroom. I'm sharing how important it is for our students to be that voice, to be grounded in their mission, to be empowered in what they do and live purposefully. And so with all that being said, I worked for AT&T, Pepsi Cola, Quest Diagnostics, NWN and Carousel. I'm trying to bring everything that I've learned in both church leadership, corporate leadership, life, being a relationship kind of person, and letting the students know what real life is about. Like, you can't halfway get through life. You're going to have to lead. You got to stay focused. You got to help others. And hopefully that's what they get as they go through that length and experience. So once again, I hope that was 60 seconds. Thank you all for having us today.
So I just want to, and then I'm gonna lend it down to our facilitator, our host. So I wanna shout. What we're gonna give you is something very rare that can be done. We have some of our students that are here, and I don't know if you've ever been to a family reunion. If you just got old folks there, but when you add some of that young blood, that's what you get. And I want to thank all of our students that have shown up, and hopefully they will participate. So I yield the floor to you, my brother.
All right. Very, very rich backgrounds here and experience and life and education. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled. So we're going to follow the lead of Dr. Green with information. I just need to pull it up here. So the first thing we want to address. Yes, did somebody call me?
Yeah.
Yes, did somebody call me?
I did probably.
Yes. Did you? Okay, before we get started, this is Ronnie Roberts, alumni of Langston University. Did
Oh,
you want to
wow.
say something before we get started?
I can't be here long, but I wanted to pop in. I am a graduate of Langston's Business School. In
Wow.
January of 1969 is when I graduated. I actually had the graduation ceremony that May.
Who's the dean? Who's the dean? I'm trying to get some history. Who's the dean there? The dean
I
at the
think it
time.
was Ma Allen.
Okay.
She was an AKA. She and her sister taught math there, but Miss Allen, they were both AKAs. I took most of my accounting classes from Beverly Barnes, a Caucasian lady that was there. And I was there from January 67 through January 69. I started out my college collegiate career at Howard University when I thought I was a football player. Discovered I wasn't. Well, I could play a little bit, but not at the late rate I needed to. Transferred to Oklahoma State for a year and a half and had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Anderson, who was the president of American Institution of Certified Public Accountants and was the publisher of the textbook that was used throughout the United States for Principles of Accounting 1 and 2. I took my first accounting class from him. Just amazing atmosphere. A year later, I transferred to Langston University, and in 2 years, I got my diploma in business administration with a minor in mathematics and was the
Wow.
first Black accountant hired by Amoco Production Company in Tulsa.
Wow. Thank you.
And then I later moved 7.5 years there, I later moved to the Williams Companies and became the first Black accountant supervisor for Williams Natural Gas Company. So Langston works. Langston changed my life. I went to probably the granddad of all HBCUs, Howard, but and it was a really exciting, fascinating time. But Langston is my heart, and as you see, my heart bleeds Langston straight out of Langston.
Straight out of Langston shirt. I like that.
Oh, wow.
Got a straight out of Langston shirt.
And I don't know if as
Is
further,
Ronnie. Ronnie lives here.
Yes, I lived in Long Beach, California for 20 years, and Rosh Ken taught together in a program
called. It says straight out of Langston.
Straight out of Langston, yes, sir. So my key is Rosh Ken. Not only is he I don't know, I was somewhat of a mentor for him. I'm a little older than him, but he's a personal friend of mine. And he had been after me for a couple of years before I finally came on the podcast. I had met him. I knew him. I knew Professor Ra because I had gone to a couple of his seminars with my roommate, Sidney Gordon, who was a good friend of his. So kind of tied in with these two cats from Compton.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming, Brother Ronnie.
I appreciate being here. I appreciate being among Langston Lions.
We need to get Brother Ronnie's information because we're trying to connect all business alumni back to our foundation. So more to come.
Yes, I'll give it to you. Yeah, I was at the scholarship dinner, give money every year. Yes, I'd like to hook up.
All right. Thank you, Ronnie. All right. Let me get back to the topics here this evening. So I'm the future of entrepreneurship, opportunities and challenges. So the first thing we want to address is how is the definition of entrepreneurship changing in today's economy, especially in the post-pandemic and AI-driven era? So we can start with, like we said, ladies first. Mm-hmm. So we could start with Dr. Leslie.
Thank you. So I think that question has several different directions that you could take it. I think what I've seen, I'll talk on that a little bit, and then what I've experienced myself. You know, a number of people lost their jobs during that time. And, you know, it was a time where maybe people had given some thought to, you know, having their own business, but never really took the initiative to do anything with it. So they were at home. They had the time to, you know, explore it further. And coming out of the pandemic, a lot of people just decided to, you know, move forward with their businesses, with their plans that they made during the pandemic, and they didn't go back to their regular jobs. A lot of that had to do with some of the attitudes that the jobs organizations had assumed during that time. They were less worker friendly. And, you know, for myself, during that time, I used that to start my consulting business. I used it to start my foundation, the Cornegay Foundation. I used it to write my book. I did a lot of different things during those 2 to 3 years that have really helped to propel me further into being able to succeed in the educational field, you know, like I was talking about earlier. And, you know, in the book, I talk a lot about one of the things I thought about a lot was legacy. We'll talk about that a little bit more. I think we'll have enough time to get to that in the questions. But I think a lot of people really started to think about, you know, why am I here if they made it through the pandemic? And what am I supposed to be doing? And, you know, kind of finding their purpose from there. So those are my thoughts. In terms of AI, I think AI kind of came out a little bit later for most people, like in the last year or so, in terms of really using it. And I think that's because a lot of companies have, it's kind of in their face. Their email has Copilot. They're, being told or encouraged to use ChatGPT or some type of work process AI tool. AI has not really, it has replaced jobs, but it hasn't replaced jobs like it will in the future. There are just some things that are repetitive that AI, if the robot is created the right way, can do the job. So I think for not necessarily for entrepreneurs, but even for people that are still working that 8 to 5, what I encourage my students to do is find out in your profession that you want to go into, how is AI being used and how can it be used so that you can stay ahead of, what's happening. And AI is changing every day. So it's a constant knowledge gainer that you need to do.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dr. Charles Mambula.
Still on the same question. Well, entrepreneurship is changing from the traditional, notion of risk-taking and human-led innovation. So to encompass agility now to technological growth and technological fluency with like the AI, and then there's more diversity, of course, more regeneration. And as we know, it's economies are getting more global and international, more networks are developing. So the more value creation internationally now, rather than just being local. So it is a point now where the AI is now considered as owners of businesses call the AI or CAI like a co-founder, or a business partner, because of being able to help them in making decisions and to democratize resources and to automate tasks and make decisions for them. So that's how things are changing. Things are no longer you don't know no longer you no longer depend upon intuition or how you think of things in a personal way anymore. So things are more perverse and more versatile now, and it's become a knowledge sharing type of thing where people share knowledge and compete with each other in those ways. So it has moved from just being the undertaker of a business now to being something that is very fluid and versatile. It's very open now, and that is the way I see it.
Okay, thank you. Professor Dottie.
Absolutely. I'll go quick here. So in 1960 or so, my grandfather made a bold move from Oklahoma to Oakland, California with his sisters, some nieces and nephews. And all he had was capital and ambition and started National Furniture. That wasn't just a furniture store. It was a pillar of the community. He connected with people authentically. He created relationships. And had he been here still today, I'd probably be running National Furniture on a whole nother scale. That business came and went. I think entrepreneurship today is shifted, but has those same tenets. Today, it's shaped by social media. It's shaped by technology. I think the evolution of it is the connection to be able to build a community online. Many of my endeavors, all of my endeavors, actually, it's about sharing stories. It's about impacting the life faster. Even the ministry that I'm running is on TikTok. Thousands of people come every week. because they're connecting with something. We don't need a storefront. We don't need someone being the face or the voice of something. All they need is transparency. They need to know that there's a purpose behind it. They need to see that people are real. They need to know that you're not out trying to scheme or game or fraud somebody. And if they believe that you're doing it for the right reason, people will get behind it. Most of the social media right now, whether it's YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, there are companies that are paying young people to be what we call influencers. And so I'm encouraging my class to get along on that trend, because as I just mentioned here in Oklahoma, Paycom just let 500 people go because of AI, as mentioned before. But if you can be the voice that can tell authentic stories for a brand, you will have a space in this changing entrepreneurial landscape. And I think it aligns perfectly with, you know, what we're doing at Langston, what we're trying to teach people. You know, business strategy is not just books and academia. It is going out, creating relationships, and giving people the purpose of what they're doing.
Thank you. Dr. Gray?
I think it's simple. I think we're going backwards. So when I say that, I want you to think about something I did not know about was Black Wall Street. I did not know, nobody told us about that, what happened with the massacre. But I do think, and I'm be biblical, I think God's bringing us back. So people are losing their jobs, and so they're doing side hustles, they're trying to survive. And I think the students that we deal with, and that's why I think we have an advantage, we're going back to, so there's a big race. There's a race for everybody to have all the AI stuff, all the data analytics. We're going back to building relationships. So having our students with the professors like Cornegay and Dowdy, have entrepreneurs, and you got Dr. Mabula, who's talking about international, we're giving them hands on hands. And so I think it's out of necessity that you got to have a side hustle. You got to be able to understand. I tell my students, you got to have multiple jobs, opportunities. And so I think retooling, so the skill that you have today, and that's what I think is not going to be the skill that's going to be needed. And we're trying to teach our students to evolve, to change. And I think that is where we're in a different time. A lot of information, but we still got, some people said when the internet was going to come, there would be no more libraries. But now, You do a search on Google, you come up with a million things. And so I do think reskilling, upskilling is going to be, the entrepreneurs are going to be looking different. They got to be aggressive. And I do think we're in a great time to be building for our communities.
Okay, thanks a lot. Before we move to the next question, anybody that has a question, please contact me in the chat if you can. And then if you're not able to contact me in the chat because you probably don't know about the chat feature, just please raise your hand. And I want to do that after each question. So is there anybody that you can raise your hand right now if you have a question for that first question that they answered? Okay, well, I'm going to move on. Okay. This is access to capital. Access to funding continues to be one of the biggest challenges for minority entrepreneurs. What creative financing strategy or community-based approaches are emerging that show real promise? Okay, we're going the same order.
So what I've seen is, and this may be more on a social kind of connection. For example, well, there's two examples. One is, and they're both entrepreneurs. One was the show that I told you about that came up during the pandemic era. And it was homegrown, but it was put together by someone who's an engineer at heart, who just had a passion for bringing the community together and providing resources or discussions and inviting guests to come on and talk on that show. And it grew from there. The people that supported that show in the beginning actually came together as a social network and helped to fund the business. Now, they've done some other things since then, but they actually helped to seed him because they saw what he was doing and they saw the purpose and they believed in it. Another example is a community where a young entrepreneur and his wife are both fitness specialists, wellness, and they built a community and they've done the same thing. And, you know, what I'm finding is that the people within the community, they build on each other's skills. So for an example, one person may have a is a gun specialist and does the conceal and carry training and does the other training. Well, everybody in that network, when they have a training, they're going to pay for that person to do that training. You know, it's the same thing with boxing, right? You won't believe the people that have turned out because this individual has taken the time to and opened his studio for boxing classes to be put on. And supporting one of the members that works out with him. So now the boxing is like every Tuesday night until everybody gets tired of it. But everybody's learning. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but there are a lot of creative ways that I'm seeing that people that are not having to go into a traditional bank to have money. And oftentimes they're not going to provide it anyway. The other thing is, like with my foundation, I was actually fortunate. The people just came together, some of the same people. But I was actually fortunate to have a lady that's what she does is fund. She goes around for companies and she does the campaign funding. So sometimes these people are right there in your backyard, but it's about putting yourself out there in the community and getting involved, because that's really, you know, the only way that you're going to know who's doing what and who's got different skills and that sort of thing. You know, I'm seeing a lot of that because, like Dr. Green said, a lot of people have all kinds of side hustles. You know, they're doing, you know, 3, 4, 5 different things. And some of them are 501(c)s, some of them are for profit, that sort of thing. You know, I have another girlfriend that she's a chemist. So she's developed her own hair care line and has started with, you know, she was the developer for a while and selling it out of her trunk until she found a company that would actually take her formula that she trusted, that, you know, with all of the standards that she would expect to, you know, produce her product. And so now she's gone and created, used AI, created her website, and she's using the digital side of that to get her product out there. So, people are being successful. It's not so much anymore where you go out, you go out and you borrow $100,000, $200,000 and start a business with a business plan and all of that for a bank to loan to you. But I do encourage people to have some idea about where they see their business going, before they go out and spend a lot of money. I mean, they need to try it out on a population to see if it's going to work.
All right, thanks a lot. I'm gonna go to Professor Ra. He had a question. Professor Ra, you need to unmute.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. I still want to welcome all of you from Langston and congratulate you on your accomplishments, achievements, to be scholars and to work with young African American people for the most part, and encouraging them to be the best that they can be. That's a very noble position. You have to love teaching to stay in it. And you have to love working with young people. And one of the hardest things in the world is to work with people, even our own family members. But it's a struggle. And but when you win their hearts and minds, you can really shape them. A couple questions I have, and my questions is not to challenge but at one time we had 100 Black
I just
colleges.
didn't have too much gas.
They used to brag about the 100 Black colleges. Most of them were land
How many
grants and
classrooms
Christian
are you taught in?
schools and things of this nature.
Okay.
Now,
All right, baby. I'll see you
on at
later.
Langston,
I'll see you. I'll see you.
the Board of Trustees, what is the composition of that? As far as ethnicity and racial.
That's pretty easy.
Not case.
Yeah, it's predominantly white. I mean, this yeah, that's the that's selected by the governor and all of that stuff. So that most of it's predominantly white. So that's
Yeah.
Professor Rod, you have to unmute.
At Cal State Long Beach, about 4 to 5% of the faculty is Black. You understand? And most of them were in Black studies, and that's how they increase Black faculty. They put them in African American studies for the most part. It's very challenging because a lot of our young men and young women, soon as they finish school, they look for jobs and they don't go get the PhDs or the masters sometimes. I mean, I think what about 17% of us got masters, and I don't even think we have a percentage for PhDs, from my understanding. But getting back to Langston, what percentage of the faculty is Black?
Well, I would say over 80% of them are
80%,
African Americans. Yeah, I think.
20% is white or Asian.
Other
Yeah.
white,
Yeah. Sure.
yeah, white. I'd say African descent from the Mid East, and white.
And most of y'all, I hear you talk about entrepreneurship and competing with AI in the job market. So entrepreneurship is an outlet, but most businesses fail if you don't have a 5-year financing, just be there for a long time. They used to say 5 years, probably take 7 now. But the challenge is, does Langston have a plan for vocational training? Do they do any vocational training?
Great point. Langston is a land grant university. So it has a mandate. It has an ag department. But in terms of the state of Oklahoma, it's kind of segmented out. You have your vocational schools, and then you have your community colleges, and then you have your 4-year schools. And really the state right now is pushing. If you talk to I think it's kind of dumbing down, but they're not emphasizing going to college. They're emphasizing get a trade. So that's what the trend is.
I'm talking about what Langston doing.
Langston's right now, their professional degrees is pretty much what they're in. We do have a 2-year degree, but no vocation. Boundaries or barriers. I mean, their vocational, that's their mandate, and they don't mix. 4-year schools are not doing that right now.
Now, when it comes to entrepreneurship, you need money.
Yes.
Okay, so but you don't really need education from the standpoint of other than how to put your checking together and your business together and things of this nature. But most businesses, you know, it's about do you have the money to start it, even if it's an online business and things of this nature with regards to promotion and putting your goods out. And here you're talking about AI, and most people are concerned about AI in the future. So how does entrepreneur offset the future of AI when it comes down to AI getting into entrepreneurship?
So, I let my colleagues answer this, but for me, it's easy. AI is like a calculator. AI is a calculator, is a tool. That is going to change, but I think right now it's a calculator. I think entrepreneurs like Professor Dowdy, I think he has a publishing house, and he's leveraging technology. I mean, he's not running away from it. I think you can leverage it. It's going to take away jobs, but it's also going to produce jobs if you're savvy. And most entrepreneurs, we see problems and opportunities. So I think the future is going to be turned as disruptive. Lawyers are going to be maybe out of job, finance, accounting. But I do think those people that have entrepreneurial have a spirit. For us, I think the future is different. So I think that's the whole debate in the old days.
Question is,
yeah,
if they develop the technology of AI to move into online, just like Amazon is using AI now, and then the internet and all of that, T-Mobile and Verizon and all of them going to AI. What type of entrepreneurship can compete with the future for the standpoint? Let's say, for instance, a young kid come in. And he goes to Langston, and he was majoring in business. And you teaching him about entrepreneurship. What type of entrepreneurship that you would tell a kid to prepare for in the future?
So Dr. Dowd is teaching that class. You might want to jump in there for me.
I will. So here's where we are with AI. We embrace it in the class. There's several opportunities when it comes to not using AI, but as Dr. Green has said, it is a tool. One of the things that we ask our students to do is come up with something that moves them, something that's a game changer. An entrepreneur shouldn't just be doing it to make money. If you want to go buy a franchise, you can. You go buy McDonald's, you can do that. But what can you change? What can you influence? What's broken? You start with that idea. AI can't touch you. AI can't feel goosebumps. AI can't get to my soul. AI cannot change a person's opinion based on just a couple of words in an algorithm. What we're teaching is that you got to have a presence. You have a purpose. And when people have purposes and they have an ambition, nobody's going to stop them. Now, to answer your question specifically, because you've asked it two different ways, maybe three, I would suggest, and I'll give you an example. There's a young man with the company that I started. I started a company that's a publishing site. And a young man came along that Dr. Green turned me on to. His name is Alvin Lovitz. We call him Mr. Alabama. He was a car salesman his most of his life. He was actually a car salesman there in Compton, California. He's also in Alabama. He wanted to do something at the age of 73 that most people don't do, start a business. He was an entrepreneur. He wanted to start a book, write a book, but it was more than just a book. I explained to him that, sorry, you are a coach. You are a leader. You can provide multiple insights and consulting based on your experience. So he ended up writing this book that tells his entire story. Inside of this is what we now call monetization. His niece is now taking over his social media. We don't need AI to do it for us. It helps us. And so there are creative beta programs where high performing content providers can get paid earnings based upon their content. Again, it's about relationships and purpose. There's a lot of people out there door dashing. That's not entrepreneurship. There's a lot of people baking cakes and cookies. That's a hobby. What makes this different is that Mr. Alabama and other people that I'm helping out in the classroom, outside the classroom, they're engaging people. Here's the thing. If we're not tied to social media, then we're going to get lost. I don't care how much AI you know. It has to be tied to the public. It has to be tied to the social apparatus of who's out there. Millions of people every day do this. That's all they do. That's all they do. The entrepreneur has the greatest opportunity in the world to reach this group. AI is deeply engaged in social. So that means we got to teach social. We're teaching in our courses a segmentation of social media. Dr. Green knows this. I take a portion of my 16 weeks and we're telling them how to be micro influencers, how you can get a part, how you can be a part of brand placement and be an affiliate marketer, how you can grow your base based on simple conversations like this every day, teaching them how to make sure your background looks the part and that your camera has to be HD. We're teaching them that you just can't jump online and simply think you're going to make somebody's money. If you're going to earn any content or any kind of a monetization from a company, from a follower who's watching you, you got to keep their attention. You got to do something different. And so what we're teaching is that if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you got to learn how to use your God-given talents. You got to take that exposure. You got to run with it. You got to be different. You have to be a change agent. You got to be somebody that has a heart and ambition to go do it. It's more than just, I want to be an entrepreneur and I'm scared of AI. We're not afraid of AI at Langston University. Dr. Green, if I stepped over a little bit there, you tell me, but we're showcasing students. We're asking on this Thursday, actually tomorrow in my entrepreneurship class, they're finishing their one of their final presentations is to show how they will take their business. They've been working on their business all semester, and then they're going to present tomorrow to a group of people of kind of like a mini Shark Tank of here's how I would do it. They're taking everything that I just explained, but over 16 weeks on how to turn that into something more than just, you know, an income statement, more than just a storefront. You got to be able to connect with people. You got to be able to do it in a way where people want to stick around.
Is that like a business plan, Ken?
Full business plan. Yes. Yes. And they have to do it in 5 minutes. They don't have all day to share it. They got to be able to explain their SWOT. They got to be able to go through the marketing plan. They got to be able to explain how they intend to connect with the community, to connect with customers, get the funding. Again, they're juniors and seniors, some sophomores, and so they're still building this out. I don't expect for it to be 100% baked, but that's what we've worked on. Like we're creating business owners, and so I take a lot of pride in doing it because I'm doing it. I started from the ground up, zero funding for my publishing company. We're now up to 30 books. I have 15 authors. I didn't need any money other than my ambition and social media. I got on TikTok, got on Instagram, got on Facebook. Didn't even pay for ads. It has to be organic because the ads will go away. You can pay somebody $300 to get in the face of somebody. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to buy anything. You have to connect with your audience. And so that's what we're teaching, or at least that's what I'm trying to do, Dr. Mabala. I'm sorry, I went over again.
Okay, so Professor Ra, I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to get to Dr. Mabula. Dr. Mabula?
Okay.
Did you want to talk about the access to capital?
Yeah. Access to capital is very important. So there are many different ways of raising capital. From dreaming about winning a lottery to inheriting money from your grandparents or your family, or raising money with your family to start something. But there are many different other ways too that you can do it. Community development financial institutions is one of them. There are some grants, you know, government grants that are available, government programs, and many other community-focused models like cooperatives, that people in cooperatives can do it. I remember there was, that was a while ago, a church in Houston. I don't remember the church now, but he is a black pastor in Houston who used to work for in Wall Street. And so he left almost $1 million a year job to start this church so that he can train people and help communities to grow. So he will train people who have ideas when they bring ideas to the church and give like a kind of a plan of how they will do it, and then he will sponsor them. And he ended up sponsoring so many people in his church. And they have many different business setups in Texas, in the Houston area. Another story that fascinated me is, I don't know if you have read a book called Banker to the Poor. It's written by Muhammad Yunus. He was an economist professor, and he worked for the World Bank. And he won a world prize, a world peace prize, Nobel Prize for that. So what he did was to train and equip poor people in Bangladesh by raising money within the community so that he can give money to the poor people in Bangladesh to start their own type of businesses, very small businesses, many different types of small businesses. And that brought a lot of people in Bangladesh out of poverty. It's a very nice book. It's called Banker to the Poor. If you ever come across that book, that is how Muhammad Yunus has done it. So, and recently there's something they call crowdfunding. So where a lot of people bring money together and start sharing to people bypassing banks and traditional ways of loaning money. Sometimes they give that to help people who don't have means of getting some kind of support, or people who are bypassed or being discriminated against for getting loans. They have that type of method too. And then of course there's a peer-to-peer lending where peers lend money to each other amongst themselves. And then there's that cooperative one that people in a community pool money together to help give people and return it. The Muslims have another one, a method that they use. They give loans to people and then they don't take any interest, zero interest on that one. I'm trying to remember the name of what they call it, but it's an interest-free loan that they give to people. So, and it's becoming popular in some other countries. So, donation reward type of loans are also available, and people can also monetize resources in their community, without paying for it. They can get those things as raw materials and use them to save on monies that they would have used to pay for those things. And many times, like things like recycling, they do some of these things like recycling. So they have some kind of ingenious ways of trying to improvise ways of saving money than borrowing it by using local resources in the community. To save them. I've seen them do that in many different places, even in Chile. I've seen them do things like that. So, feeding their animals or whatever, saving money with resources in the community, that is another way in which those type of things can be done. So, just looking for different opportunities. It can be done rather than following the traditional way, going to the bank and getting a very high interest rates that you cannot pay and make you bankrupt and not even go back to business again. So you want to bypass that type of method and look for different ways in which you can raise money more efficiently and save on top of that. So these are a few ways I believe that can help people to save money. Yeah. I studied an entrepreneur once when I was doing my doctorate research. I studied some entrepreneurs in Africa. So they were plastic manufacturers. They were making plastics. So, but these entrepreneurs, one of them started with no money at all. He started by grinding waste recycling, waste plastics. He recycled waste plastics to get his raw materials. And then he uses those raw materials with his molds to produce products. Started making buckets, and some different type of plastic products just by doing that is how he started. And then he grew on top of that. So these are different ways of improvising, not waste investing money by borrowing on interest, So
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Green.
I think my staff done a great job on that. I just think we have to have a desire to do something different. I mean, I sell cool cups, sell popsicles. I mean, sell something. I think we just have to be borrow from cousin, aunt, cousin Bill or aunt Crystal. We got to find somebody to invest. We call it in our industry, we call it angel investors. And I think Dr. Mabula mentioned something like
Yes,
that. So we just
yes.
have to think outside the box. I think a lot of us, I mean, I'm an entrepreneur myself, and you start with nothing. And I think we can do that. I think if we go back to, I go back to Black Wall Street. I go back to before we had gentrification. Those folks had businesses, had stores, had all those things. They didn't, and a lot of those individuals weren't educated. They didn't have degrees. But they had that common sense. I think we have to go back to, like I said, we're going back to the basics. I see Atlanta University. We are Wall Street. We're trying to rebuild Wall Street and changing things up. So that's my 2 cents worth of that. And I think our faculty did a great job in giving some solutions.
Okay, so what I'm gonna do, since nobody raised their hand too much, I'm going to go ahead and I'm gonna go around to the panel because we're over an hour now. I don't know how much time everybody has. I mean, I know we could talk all night about these topics, but I want to see, especially the students. I'm gonna start with Sonia, because Sonia, she came on early with me and we had a great conversation. So Sonia, do you have a question or comment for your professors?
Coming down from the Pacific. We need to move
in
California,
Central California. Sonia, you're on mute, Sonia. If you don't, it's fine if you don't have a question. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sonia's shy. She's shy. She's doing a great job. We're glad to meet her. She's shy. Thank you.
Thank you.
No question or comment? You don't have to. No.
I do have a comment in a sense of entrepreneurship. I know a lot of people currently like enjoy being an entrepreneurship. I would say for me personally, that's not my thing, but I do recommend being in the financial industry that even if their degree or don't want to get a degree in business or anything, I do believe people should take some type of basic financial courses or some type of business customer service type of skills when they are doing some type of entrepreneurship, because you are going to be dealing with people. You don't want your money to be where you're just living on it from like paycheck to paycheck type of thing. And I realize a lot of entrepreneurs tend to not be really financial savvy when it comes to entrepreneurship. So I do think that even if they didn't want a degree in the field, they should at least take like some courses to educate themselves on different areas of that field.
Okay, appreciate that, Sonia. Thanks for attending. I think Jay Hamilton, a question or comment? You're muted. Okay, I'm going to move on to Jalen Hollins.
No, sir, I don't have any questions or comments.
Okay, thanks for coming.
No problem. Okay.
And now let's go to the people that I don't think they're students. Let's go to Ernest. Ernest, do you have a question or comment? No, you on mute.
Yeah, I got to unmute because I'm learning a lot for myself, you know, by attending these courses, because some of those things I heard over the years. But right now I'm at a point in my life where, like, I'm 87, my wife's 86, she's got like about fourth to fifth stage Alzheimer's dementia, and I'm a full-time caregiver. So that occupies all my time. And then for me, you know, hearing a lot of this is really enlightening, because some of these things I've kind of learned them before, you know, years back. You know, it's bringing back a lot of memories for me. So it's really, you know, a form like this is really, it's kind of like learning all over again, a new process of learning for me. So that's all I have to say. And I really appreciate everybody donating their time and to programs like this.
I appreciate you, Brother Ernest. Okay, Dr. Sherita. Just listening. Okay.
Okay. Hello.
Yes.
Greetings, everybody. Thank you so much for putting on this platform in reference to entrepreneurship. I just wanted to just kind of listen in and just, you know, absorb. I think I know a little bit about business, but it's always good to fill in the blanks, you know, when you're listening to you know, many people that's coming from different perspectives. I'm Dr. Sherita. I'm with the Goss Corporation, which is New Body Products and New Earth Health Food Stores out of straight out of Compton, the original string out of. And we are celebrating 50 years next year, 2026. So we're starting a year-long celebration. And well, let me start at the end. I need $2 million. That's the end of the conversation. But what we're doing is renovating a building that we bought, because we've been literally renting all this time in three different locations on the same street. And now we're going to consolidate everything into this one space. And the founder is Dr. Paul Goss, the late, great Dr. Paul Goss, who's been in the community. Well, we've been here 50 years, but he's been here 60 years. And he made his transition about 4 years ago. So we're carrying on. This is a legacy piece. And it is a challenge as being Black in America, woman in America, in the ghetto, trying to get money, especially from places like banks and and people that you're, you know, doing business with for 20, 30, 40 years, can't give you any money. You know, so we know in all the different angles that the brother talked about, I think I went through at least half of them. But we are, you know, coming up with different creative ways to build funds, because at the end of the day, like the brother said, we started with nothing, literally with nothing. And my father always said, you can start any business with $1. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's, of course, that means you have a very, very large vision. and is very real to you, you know? So I just wanted to just kind of say a little something as a community, a business as in a community, a family business. And we do our own, manufacture our own products, our herbal products. We have over 130 products. And we're putting our manufacturing, our office, and our helpful store all in one space. So it's there. We've had it since 2020. And it's paid for. But, you know, we really are looking to find real funding. So I'm coming to talk about our business just because I like to celebrate good news. And the other thing is that I need some moolah. And another thing, we do also need help, because that's one of the things that I think I would want to address as far as a question. How do you go about getting employees to come and stay? You know what I'm saying? It's been very much a challenge. I would say since COVID, as far as getting, we had, I think 16, 17 people during COVID, and we're working with 10 people doing the same work and even double the work, because COVID made our business grow, because it's wellness. So, but it's been very hard getting people, not even just to come work, but even people putting in the application. And we've done all kind of different. The last attempt was ZipRecruiter, which was a total waste of money, for the record.
Dr. Sharita?
Yes.
So I can answer this. You want me to answer this real quick? I can answer this.
Real quick.
This. All right. So it's a four letter word. You got to pray. So here's the situation right now. I always get this question. Can we get some students? Can you get some of your students and do it for this? Some experience students, you know, maybe the students can speak to this, but we're in a different time. And I think they have to value. I'm running into that all the time. I had this one guy. I was working with a client. He had a problem. He couldn't get workers, and he was doing that. He started using a temporary service so that they could get the headaches, and he didn't have to do that. So that was his one solution, trying to staffing a local staffing agency and let them deal with that. But this is just people really don't, I hate to say this, but people don't want to work. And
they don't. It's a new way of working. It's a new way of working. And I don't mean to cut you off, but
no, you're good.
About
you're good.
My nephew in North Carolina, who is now 21, and he's working for Amazon. But so a lot of these children are doing app jobs. So I'm trying to think about how can I turn our job into an app job, because one of my daughters is doing an app job. This TaskRabbit, I met this guy, he has 17, 18, 20 different tasks that he did, you know what I'm saying? And so I think it's not that they don't want to work. Well, some of them don't. even people my age don't want to work, but they work in differently. So I'm watching my nephew and I'm like, so when are you going to work? You not working today? He said, yeah, I'm just gonna go into the email and let them know I want to get some hours. And then he turns on his app, do whatever, and then they say, okay, we need 10 men, you know, from this time to that time. And he just been piling up his money.
Yeah, but I would say I just think we just built different. I mean, I think Ken has kids that are young adults, and the young adults out there, they can speak. But it's just the type of work, like you said, it's the type of work. But then it's just, you know, I mean, like I'll pay you $30 or $40 to help me move some stuff. They're not trying to do all of that, and I just think you know, that's why we're struggling in this I think the brother Ryan mentioned about the vocations. We're struggling because people don't want to do that. Young folks do not want to do a lot, majority of them, not all.
Not physical.
Yeah. So that's what I said. That's what a prayer. You pray that you can get someone that you can embrace. I mean, you got tons of.
I'm on my knees every morning and every night, brother.
How many times you got to get on the knees? Pastor, we got a pastor now. How many times you need to get on the knees?
All the time. Till the answer comes. That widow went to the Lord, to the judge every day until the judge got tired.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I would offer another solution. And it's a hybrid. You know, you can try it to see if it impacts how you can get employees. When I was at AT&T and even at Quest Diagnostics, I had to change how people came and went. We had competitors in the space, in the call center space, sales space. So I had to submit to management, to leaders, my vice president, a bonus solution that did not look favorable for the company on paper. Hey, that's a big bonus we're giving away. But how do you think they're going to stay? You got to have something that will drive them. It may mean coming off a little bit of the revenues, but if you can entice them, and I don't know if it's a sales position or a customer service position, but even if it's a hybrid position, if you can tell them, hey, your bonus at the end of the week is $500, but here are the stipulations to get that burning bonus. But you set the bonus a little higher than what they can actually jump on that totem pole, right? And they'll always be jumping on the trampoline to try to get to it. You make it almost reachable, almost as acceptable and sustainable that a few of them can get it. All you need is two or three people to get the bonus. The others will think that they can get the bonus.
Okay. Well, not to cut you, we do have bonuses that we give to our employees. So we have a good 5-6 that's been with us. We just had one recently that passed away just past July, one of our key people. And so the thing is, it's not so much of definitely, okay, yeah, keeping people, and we've been able to keep some good ones, but getting people just to even come in the door to apply.
Signing bonus.
And you know, it's
How much is your signing bonus? If I came to, if I send some people to your way right now, what's my sign-on bonus?
There's no signing bonus. We're a small family business. We start minimum wage. You know what I'm saying? We're a minimum wage business.
So perhaps that's how we think outside the box. Perhaps I was business consulting you. I highly advise that you either find the capital, invest in the capital. And again, there's a payout that comes with it. Here's your bonus. But to keep this bonus or to maintain this wage level, here's what I have to get from you. You have to sell X number of products. You have to go and post on social media at night. You have to be this family business that's more than just coming here for 8 hours. I need to go to your Facebook and see that you've been posted 5 things this week and shared. You need to be in the comments. You need to be hitting the like button. You need to be on TikTok posting your own stuff. Like, for you to earn this bonus, you're going to get it. You know what you get out of that? Mm-hmm. It's not really free marketing. It's paid marketing, but in a different narrative. If you can get, how many employees you have? 5? If they're all posting on TikTok every day about the business 3 times a day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, that's like the equivalent of giving TikTok or any company $5,000 to get in front of people. And I don't know how many people they have, but it's that type of, I'm telling you, social media and purpose-driven and relationship building is the key to this future. It is. Just my 2 cents. I'll go back on mute.
Yeah, we do have a social media presence. I live in Ghana as well. I do something every Thursday, a health watch from there. Now, as far as people creating content, I got a girl in Ghana who I've been knowing for a long time, and now she's like 23, somewhere up in there, and I hired her to come work for me. But before that, I would give her money to help me with the social media. She would find different things to post in reference to tourism, places to go in Ghana, things like that, and then post them on our one of the Instagrams that I did in reference to tourism. So I like the idea of having the people that's already working for you. Well, there's only a few young ones. The older ones, I don't see them doing that, but the younger ones. Having them to create content. The problem that we have with that is that it's we definitely have to make sure as far as the phone is not with them. That's the thing about working with the young people too, is this dealing with this phone situation. So on one hand, I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea, but on the other hand, it's like, y'all don't need to have your phones during that time. So it's just, I think it's just a whole thing needs to be talked about in reference to dealing with the X-Gen, because my youngest, I have 5 children. My youngest one is 24. So dealing with the X-Gen generation in reference to work and just whatever, I think in reference to business, I think that's probably a whole show within itself. And I would love to have X-Gens give their expertise on their generation and how, what makes them want to work and then be loyal the same way me and my peers have been over the years. Gosh. And my parents and grandparents, you know what I'm saying? They worked 30 years, 40 years in retirement.
Let me tell you what the trend says. Here's what the latest economic trends are saying. If someone can validate this or fact check me. So I have a son that's turning 24 tomorrow. My daughter's 22. And like Dr. Green said, they're built different because they went through not just COVID, but they went through the actual technological change. When I worked at AT&T, 2007, the iPhone came out. I was on the ground floor when it came out. I had the opportunity to see my own kids see this change because I brought home a different phone every day and they had to play with it. And I saw their brains change. They will not have a job where they stay at it for 20 years or 30 years. This generation will have a minimum of 4 jobs that they will work at for 7 years, 8 years, 5 years, 10 years, maybe. And the next generation will have 7 jobs. It's not because they're lazy. It's not because they're not loyal. They're looking for purpose. our generation, my grandma and grandpa, and like you just mentioned, my mom was a principal for 40 years in one school district. My dad worked at the same place for almost 30 years because they had a family to take care of. And they got up early in the morning and fed the hogs and the pigs and make sure that the hay was baled. And then they went to practice. Not this generation. They don't even ride bicycles. They don't even stay out till late and come in when the
don't
light
make
comes.
Me cry, please.
So we have to adapt to the student. I get to talk to them every weekend when they come home because I still love my two. And then I get to talk to the ones like Jalen Hollis and Jay Hamilton is in my class where we have real conversations. We have to let them be themselves. We got to allow them to be flexible. And I'm going to go back to it. You got to let them use them phones. You got to let them use them at work. You'll probably get more productivity.
You know what? I agree with you, but I'm not the only, I have partners. So I totally agree with you with that. I don't like fighting a big fight. I pick my battles. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that, but I can't make the final decision.
Yeah. All right. You get more productivity. If you put an ad out and say, hey, you can be on TikTok all day, starting pay $17, $1,000 signing bonus, and we'll even give you more bonus if you can get 10, if you can get 1,000 views a week on your social media, we'll give you $1 for every view you get. Not only will you see your business grow, you get people to stay. But again, you're right. You got to get. Here's the thing.
So you're telling me to advertise. So from the front, advertise it that way. You're saying to advertise
absolutely.
It that way. Okay,
absolutely.
Gotcha.
Because if my son, and that may be good to bring the 24, 25 years old on here. If a 24-year-old read an ad that said starting bonus, $1,000, you know what they're thinking? PlayStation, 2K, get me a new pair of shoes immediately. That $1,000 covers four or five needs that I think I need. Those are wants. They aren't needs. You know what they're going to think next when they see a dollar or 50 cents? So we can monetize it however you want to. 25 cents for every like, 25 cents. Like you just bought what we call an influencer. We want people influencing your business. So now people are like, you work there? They pay you what? How do I get on there? They pay you for social media? You changed the game. That's what we're doing. That's how we embrace this. Staying old-fashioned, no offense. I know I don't look 50, but I'm 50 years old. I can't think how 50-year-olds look. I can't act like a 50-year-old. I can't act like a 59-year-old. We have to evolve with this current group because I think another statistic said in the next 20 years, we won't have that many baby boomers left. They'll all be 80 or 90 if they make it that long. You'll be left with all the X's. I'm an X. And we'll be in our 60s and 70s. And we have to be the ones that think different for the 24s and the 23s. 100 years from now, none of us will be here. Lord, don't come back and get us before then. Person's living in your house right now, or whoever's living in your house right now, will be somebody totally different. None of us will be living in our houses. None of us will have the money that we think have. Somebody else will have all our money, all our houses, and all our cars. The question is going to be, are we preparing that group? It's not even about my kids. It's about my great-grandkids. And am I instilling the right thing into my children so my grandkids and my great-grandkids can take care of this house? Because I'm not going to be here. I put a lot of money into this house. Y'all put a lot of money into y'all's property. And if we can't get that next generation to buy in, it's not about working somewhere for 30 years. It's about having purpose and vision and dreams, starting foundations and putting together your own family trust fund. Like that's the things I'll be talking about inside of class because that's the next group. Again, I'm doing way too much talking. Forgive me for getting excited.
Okay, so
this I totally appreciate you answered a lot for me. I'm already on it.
Okay, I think Dr. Leslie, you had something you wanted to say.
Well, Ken was on a roll, so I think he covered a lot of it. Working with Generation X and some Y, what I'll say is that loyalty, as Ken was saying, that doesn't really exist anymore. And even with the millennials and some of the baby boomers, right? It doesn't exist since the pandemic. One thing that I would add, not so much social media, but it's an old resource is referrals. Pay people for referrals. Have a referral system in place so that, especially, you know, because if people are still working for you, obviously they're great workers. And so maybe they know somebody else. The other thing is outreach from your team. There are a lot of people that need jobs that maybe don't have a skill set. So if somebody's willing to train and you have some type of career track progression in your company, where you're looking for the long game, that might be appealing to somebody. So, because, you know, there's still some people, the different younger generations that were raised that way and think that way, right? They're not going to go to a 4-year. High school is enough for them, and they're ready to go out and start working. So, you know, just something to think about.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to go to Mashariki, Remy, or somebody else. Dr. Green?
I'm good. I just want to thank you for giving us this opportunity. I do say part two. Okay. Let's do this. We'll bring more of those lines. And I'm just glad to be a part of this. And we're going to continue this and thank our students. I know y'all gonna be up late anyway doing some work, but I want to thank you guys. I want to thank your audience. And let's don't make this the last time that we get together.
Oh, I appreciate it. I realize that it is getting late for you all on the other coast or Midwest. So okay, we ended here, and I look forward to doing this again with more student participation. I appreciate everyone for attending this evening, and Langston University, you are awesome, awesome. And so we'll continue to do these type of forums here. So
thank you.
I'm gonna end thank with you. Our greeting, and we will on the website where you will see our guests for next week. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a wonderful day, and we will be in contact. Thank you.
Yes.